It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Europe is preparing for a new wave of refugees as word filters back to others that the passage through Hungary is now easier. Hundreds have arrived at Vienna's main train station from the Hungarian border after officials in Hungary decided to allow thousands of refugees who have been stranded in Budapest to travel by train to the border. As many as 11,000 refugees reportedly have made it to Germany in recent days. Monash University international relations scholar Benjamin McQueen tells VOA letting in such large numbers of refugees is a change in policy for some European countries.
We are seeing changes at the European level, and the European leaders collectively are having to respond to events. There is a meeting scheduled for next week to discuss a collective response to the crisis, but as you'll see from the differing responses from the Hungarian government, from the Austrian government and the German government, including the German federal governments, that there is as yet no real consensus on what to do.
And there is word that more refugees are crossing the border from Serbia into Hungary. Kurdish militants attacked a convoy of Turkish troops Sunday near the borders with Iran and Iraq, putting hopes for peace even further out of reach. Militants say they killed 15 soldiers when they fired on two military vehicles. Kurds are fighting for more autonomy in southern Turkey and northern Iraq. South Sudan's rebel leader Riek Machar says his group will ratify the recently signed peace agreement tomorrow as part of an effort to restore peace in the country's nearly two-year conflict. Machar told VOA he's committed to that agreement. Both sides in South Sudan's 20-month conflict have accused each other of violating their ceasefire. This is VOA News. Tunisian authorities warned Sunday of possible car bomb attacks in the capital Tunis after receiving intelligence reports about potential attacks. Country state-run news agency says unidentified militants were planning to attack sensitive sites with car bombs and explosive belts. Security forces have stepped up patrols and road closures. North African country was the target of separate attacks on foreign tourists in March and June, killing a combined people of 60, the attacks claimed by the Islamic State. And Iraq has carried out its first airstrikes against the Islamic State group using the country's own F-16 fighter jets provided by the U.S. Iraqi military officials said Sunday the jets had conducted 15 airstrikes targeting the militants who seized control of large areas in northern and western Iraq last year. U.S. lawmakers returned to Washington this week after a month-long recess, a number of senators announcing their positions on the international nuclear accord with Iran over the past few weeks. We get more now from VOA's Michael Bowman.
Like many Democrats, Senator Chris Coons is not wildly enthusiastic about the Iran nuclear deal.
Frankly, this is not the agreement that I had hoped for.
But like most Democrats, Coons supports it anyway. In recent days, five other Democratic senators issued similar statements of support despite misgivings. Given unified Republican opposition to the accord, all eyes are on the remaining handful of Democratic senators yet to announce. Already there is ample backing to sustain President Barack Obama's promised veto of a resolution of disapproval from Congress. Michael Bowman, Washington.
Guatemalans voted in general election Sunday in the wake of a corruption scandal that triggered the resignation of President Otto Perez Molina late last week. Sunday's presidential, congressional, and municipal elections are setting a four-year term to begin in 2016. Until then, former Vice President Alejandro Maldonado will be leading Guatemala. Perez Molina said in a court interview that he is innocent of accusations that he accepted $800,000 in alleged bribery scheme. Representatives from North and South Korea began talks today aimed at resuming the reunion of families separated over 60 years ago by the Korean War. Red Cross officials from both Seoul and Pyongyang sat down for discussions at the Truce Village in Panmunjom to discuss where and when to hold the latest round of reunions, which had last occurred in February of 2014. Get more news at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, September 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Chadian President Issen Habre's trial resumes today, Monday, in Dakar.
Monday will be a great day for all the victims because the trial will begin again. And I don't hope another break.
Clement Abaifuta is president of the Association of Alleged Habre Victims. Members of a church marched Sunday against crime in South Africa. Residents of Zimbabwe's Bulawayo city protest the introduction of prepaid water meters. And Nigeria's President Buhari marked 100 days in office, but some say it has been 100 days of vendetta.
A president of a country like Nigeria with diversified ethnical situations is expected to govern Nigeria based on these ethnic divisions and diversity.
Ayodele Fayose is the governor of Ekiti State, and information technology helps Kenya deal with the problem of counterfeit goods. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The trial of former Chadian President Issen Habre resumes today, Monday, in the Senegalese capital, Dakar, after a 45-day delay. The formal trial began on July 20th this year before the Extraordinary African Chambers. Mr. Habre is charged with crimes against humanity, war crimes, and torture during his rule from 1982 to 1990. He has refused to recognize the authority of the chambers, and he was removed from the courtroom in July after he burst out yelling at the opening of the trial. Since then, he has been assigned court-appointed lawyers. Alleged victims of Habre's regime are expected to testify during the two-month-long trial. Clement Abaifuta is one of those expected to testify. He tells Ricky Shryak that after 25 years of trying to bring Mr. Habre to court, he thinks these next 2 months will finally bring some closure to the case.
Monday will be a great day for all the victims because the trial will be begin again. And I don't hope another break.
Are you fearful that there will be another break because there have been so many stops and pauses and delays?
I don't think that there will be another break because throughout 45 days, I think that the court worked and set everything to move.
What was the main issue? Why was there a break in the first place this last July?
Because, you know, Issen Habre reboot all his lawyers and such a kind of trial cannot be moved on without lawyers. And I think that this is the main reason. On Monday, I think that it will be another figure to this step of trial.
But now he has lawyers who have been appointed to him by the Extraordinary African Chambers. What if these lawyers aren't found to be competent enough?
Yeah, I think that Issen Habre is able to play the same game. He will not will be on the right according to the law to reboot, to refit those three lawyers that the court has given him.
And so are you feeling like almost anticlimactic because in July you thought it was going to finally happen and then it was delayed? Is there some sense of almost more calm than excitement because it's been so many false starts when it comes to this trial?
You know, this trial was a big challenge for me. And the thing that the way or the moment has come that we have the obligation to move on and to finish, because we cannot sit and same thing years and years. I think that the future want to be changed and to move on. So I hope that things will be good.
So in that sense, even if the trial happens, but he's found not guilty, will people be able to move on from this, do you think, or will it be open?
No, I think that it is really, we have many reasons to condemn him. Let's say that he's conscient that we reproach him many things, deep reason. He must be guilty.
Clement Abaifuta is the president of the Association of Alleged Victims of Former Chadian President Issa Habre's regime. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari marked his first 100 days in office Saturday. His spokesman, Galba Shehu, said the president wants to look ahead by focusing on fixing the country's economy, restoring security, and fighting corruption by recovering Nigeria's stolen oil money. But Governor Ayodele Fayose of Ekiti State, the man who calls himself the longest-serving governor of Nigeria, says President Buhari's first 100 days in office were marked by insensitivity to the country's ethnic and religious diversity. He cites the president's appointments as well as his anti-corruption policies.
The president's action and the inactions in terms of appointment clearly states the kind of government being run by the president of Nigeria, Muhammadu Buhari. All the appointments majorly are from the northern Nigeria, and they're not ordinary appointments. They are constitutional appointments, like the head of establishments, heads of institutions like the customs, like the state security services, and so on and so forth. Secondly, the president's war against corruption is not only selective, because most of the big people in Nigeria who claim to have wealth are people who have served Nigeria at different times within the last 16 years, including the former president, Olusegun Obasanjo. And we cannot forget the case of Ali Botin so soon. And the moment the corruption war is selective, it gets political. And it's been 100 days of vendetta, acrimony, and taking on the opposition and trying to fight them after relinquishing power to him.
Mr. Governor, so you claim that way, but where is it written in the Constitution of Nigeria that the president of Nigeria is supposed to appoint people that represent the various regions of the country?
Well, there's nowhere written in Nigerian Constitution as well where we must have zoning of the presidency. But because of our divide and the structures of Nigeria, we know very obviously that if this goes to the south, this goes to the north. We know if this goes to the Muslim, this goes to the Christian. So that certain things might not be written in the Constitution like in Britain, but morals and what is appropriate demands that we do things to make sure that this country runs properly.
So is the PDP crying foul? You've been in power. PDP has been in power. So why don't you just let the APC run the country?
Well, I want to remind you that throughout the tenure of the PDP, the APC did not stop at saying what they believe is right. And criticizing government in power is part of democracy. Democracy in itself is founded on good opposition. What I've said to you now are issue-based. They're not personal. So we're not against the president running the country, but we are against the president running country as a personal property, as a personal business. We are one Nigeria, with the north, south, east, and all.
Mr. Governor, what do you think about the war on Boko Haram that the president has been waging now?
I score the president very low on all other areas. However, I wish to commend him lately about the war against Boko Haram. Things are getting better in the last 2-3 weeks. I need to commend him about that. And I equally need to let him know that Nigeria belongs to all of us. Nobody can intimidate anybody.
Ayodele Fayose is governor of Ekiti State. He was speaking with me from the state capital, Ado Ekiti. Today is Monday, September 7th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. The Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. About 1,000 members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church took to the streets of Johannesburg on Sunday in a march organized to denounce the increase in crime in South Africa. The church says the march is a call for peace and divine intervention in the face of a rise in the number of murders, muggings, robberies, shootings, drug abuse, as well as the killing of police officers nationwide. Tuso Kumalo reports for VOA from Johannesburg.
Seventh-day Adventist SDA members of all age groups marched for 4 hours in the crime-infested Johannesburg suburbs of Hillbrow, Berea, and Uvel. Chanting slogans and beating drums, they made noise against crime.
Left, right, left, right.
and they denounced the crime wave over loudspeakers tied to the back of a van.
Drugs are causing you to be hopeless. Drugs are causing you to be jobless.
A man shot to death for refusing to surrender his cellular phone, a police officer killed by criminals while off duty, a raped infant. These are just some of many gruesome crimes that have recently dominated the news in South Africa. The South African murder rate has increased to more than 30 per 100,000, 5 times higher than the 2013 global average of 6 murders per 100,000 people. Activists say whole sections of Johannesburg and Cape Town have been taken over by criminals, prostitution rings, and drug lords. Velile Moyo, youth director of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Johannesburg, says the cities need divine intervention to achieve peace and moral restoration.
We have discovered that there's so much crime that is going on here in these large cities, and also so much of drug trafficking. And many people now have lost their morals because of the drugs that they are partaking in almost every day.
Ronald Mlalazi, chairman of the SDA churches in Johannesburg, says Sunday marks the start of a 3-week-long mega crusade to address some of the root causes of crime in the country.
We are going to have things like the soup kitchen where people come to be fed. We are running family life consultations, and also we are going to have the health expos. Then they get special advice in terms of their health.
Besides the Seventh-day Adventists, other groups have taken to the streets to protest the crime wave. In August, residents of Hot Bay in Cape Town marched to the local police station following a series of violent crimes in the area. Also last month, a group of women calling themselves the Bold and the Beautiful marched in Hillbrow, Johannesburg to protest against crime. The government has vowed to fight crime head-on, launching Operation Fiela in March of this year, following xenophobic attacks targeting foreign migrants. In that operation, police backed by the army raided crime hotspots in the major cities, arresting thousands. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The U.S. State Department last Friday criticized the decision by Rwanda's parliament and President Paul Kagame to set up a constitutional reform commission, amend or remove presidential term limit, thereby allowing President Kagame to seek a third term in 2017. Spokesman John Kirby said, while the U.S. respects the ability of any parliament to pass legislation that reflects the will of the people that it is elected to represent, it does not support those in position of power changing constitution solely for their political self-interest. But Rwandan lawmaker Juliana Katengwa says the U.S. should appreciate parliament's action because it is carrying out the wishes of the people.
I could take you back as far back as mid-March or April this year. That's when parliament started receiving petitions from the countryside to consider their wishes and change Article 101 of the Rwandan Constitution, basing themselves on the fact that that article can only be changed by a citizen's request for the parliament or the president. So when we received numbers increased, I'm saying, up to a tune of 3.6 million and more, that's slightly more than half of the voting adults of Rwanda. So as parliament, we were compelled to respond to what the citizens were doing. And so we went through the countryside and came back with massive information, mainly to do with what do they want changed and what is the justification. We reported back to parliament, and it was during that process of reporting back to parliament that we recognized the information we received was massive. We cannot process it by ourselves and continue with our normal duties. But we resolved again that we require technical support, but by our procedure, parliament doesn't have it within its powers to put that technical support into place, a commission. So we resolved to pass an act of parliament requesting the executive to establish a commission, a constitutional review commission, whose sole purpose is to lend that technical support to parliament during the exercise of considering and reviewing the constitution.
But, Madam President, Kagame himself has said that he respects the Constitution. He has continually said he's going to respect the Constitution. Why does it become necessary to want to change what is there already?
If I may share with you what the citizens were saying, is this. I mean, I can't say it all one go, but it's like this. We've had presidents before, and we've seen what leadership is like, bad and good. We've experienced good leadership under President Kagame, and unprecedented good leadership. And we've come from very far. We've reached some where we know what we want. President Kagame is not too old to continue. We cannot risk when we are somewhere at a point where we are moving forward. We want to push him to continue, and we get ourselves sure that we've passed that transition stage. Bye-bye. We are unlikely to fall back to where we are coming from. So the entire process of rebuilding and back into a normal society, they're saying we cannot risk. The cost has been heavy. The process of rebuilding has been delicate and very painstaking. We just don't want to risk. We are sure of President Kagame. We are not sure of anybody else. Somebody else new may be good, may be better, but we don't take chances.
Juliana Katangwa is a member of Rwanda's parliament. She was speaking with me from the capital, Kigali. In Zimbabwe, about 5,000 Bulawayo residents last Friday staged a demonstration against plans by the city council to introduce prepaid water meters. Mele Dube, one of the organizers of the protest, says the water meters are detrimental to the residents.
What these thousands of people of Bulawayo were saying is that we now have information, we've been given information by civil society organizations. We now know that the Council of Bulawayo has come up with a policy that will injure us, that will hurt us. And they are saying no to that program, no to that water management, no to privatization of water. So they marched in their numbers. Elderly people, we had elderly people, we had young people, we had disabled people, we had all people from all walks of life meeting there at Stanley Square and spending the whole afternoon saying out loud that they don't want prepaid water meters in Bulawayo.
What impact do you think you are making?
We are definitely sure that we have done our part, and we will continue to do our part. Our part is to organize people. Our part is to give people the truth, to tell people the truth. And the people of Bulawayo have said that they will stand against any attempt to subvert their will, any attempt to ignore their voices in policy making. So they've said that they are the ones who are going to stop their council that they elected, their people that they pay via rates and other payments that they make, who have made this policy without them. So we are organizing people, and we will not rest to do our job. And the people in Bulawayo have said they will not rest until the council climbs down and resigns its policy.
Mele Dube is one of the organizers of last Friday's protest by Bulawayo residents against prepaid water meters. He was speaking with Untunga Mile Nkomo of Via Zimbabwe Service. Counterfeit goods in Kenya cost the government as much as $1 billion each year in lost tax revenues. The fake goods also hurt entrepreneurs who find it hard to carve out a niche in the market and return customers. But as Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi, information technology is being used to try beat the problem.
34-year-old Jemima Mofigu intently logs her inventory into her computer. She is a businesswoman who deals in perfumes and designer colognes. But in the first year of running her business, she found it hard to keep customers due to counterfeit goods. She says things have improved since she began using a smartphone app known as Barcode Scanner to authenticate her products. Today, she's taking one of her clients through the authentication process before finalizing a sale. She says the app has made all the difference.
With this application, I'm able to scan the barcodes of each perfume and cologne that I'm able to sell to my customers. And instantly I get the manufacturer date, the expiry date, and I'm able to know the authenticity of it actually. It will actually point me to the perfume house that I'm looking for, that I have confidence in selling to my customers.
In 2010, Kenya created an anti-counterfeit agency, ACA, to combat the illicit trade. the ACA has successfully lobbied for steep penalties to deter would-be counterfeiters. Agnes Karingu, the ACA's acting deputy director for research and awareness, tells VOA the agency is trying to stay one step ahead of those making the fake goods.
We're also looking into IT solutions where we can be able to use SMS programs, we can be able to use barcodes and information sharing whereby the end users of the products can actually be able to scratch, get the information in the authentication between counterfeits and genuine, and this information comes back to ACA and also to the intellectual property rights holders.
That was reporter Lenny Ruvaga reporting from Nairobi, Kenya. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Burundi's former Africa women's 800-meter champion Francine Nyonsaba clocked a season best of 1 minute and 59.62 seconds to win the two-lap race at the European Classic meet in Padua, Italy on Sunday. Burundi's Antoine Gakeme prevailed in men's 800 meters in 1 minute and 46.33 seconds as Kenyan Viola Lagat and Mercy Cherono placed second and third respectively in women's 1500 meters. Meanwhile, South African Anaso Jobodwana triumphed in men's 200 meters in 20.46 seconds at the Folksam Grand Prix in Gothenburg, Sweden on Saturday. Eritrea's Mfatlem Kibrab won men's 3,000 meters. Ethiopian Aksumawit Embai prevailed in women's 1,000 meters as Djibouti's Abdi Wais Muyahedin was second in men's 1,000 meters and Kenyan Lydia Chepkurui third in women's 3,000 meters steeplechase. Turning to football, underdogs Sierra Leone held African champions Ivory Coast to a scoreless draw in their 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier in Lagos, Nigeria on Sunday. Sierra Leone hosted the African champions in Lagos as playing football is still banned in their country as a precaution to halt the spread of the Ebola virus. Elsewhere, Mauritius beat Mozambique 1-0. The Central African Republic dismissed the Democratic Republic of Congo 2-0. Zambia edged Kenya 2-1. Algeria outwitted Lesotho 3-1. Benin and Mali drew 1-1, as did Zimbabwe and Guinea. Cameroon edged Gambia 1-0. Swaziland and Malawi drew 2-2. Cape Verde Islands pipped Libya 2-1. Madagascar and Angola drew 0-0 as Egypt overpowered Chad 5-1. Meanwhile, South Sudan pipped Equatorial Guinea by a solitary goal in Juba in their 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier on Saturday. This is a historical landmark as it is the South Sudan's first victory since being admitted into the world of football in 2012. In other matches, Liberia pipped Tunisia 1-0, Gabon overpowered Sudan 4-0, Ghana edged Rwanda 1-0, Republic of Congo outwitted Guinea-Bissau 4-2, Morocco dismissed Sao Tome and Principe 3-0, Tanzania and Nigeria drew 0-0, Mauritania outplayed South Africa 3-1, Uganda edged Comoro Islands 1-0, Senegal dismissed Namibia 2-0, Seychelles and Ethiopia drew 1-1, Burundi beat Niger 2-0, Botswana edged Burkina Faso 1-0, and Togo beat Djibouti 2-0. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. That's it for this Monday, September 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you and hoping also that you will have a very, very productive week.
Next on Let's Talk, wife earning more money than her husband. Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing this sensitive issue. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next time on Straight Talk Africa, the European migrant crisis deepens each day. More than 350,000 migrants have fled turmoil and poverty in Africa and the Middle East in search of a better life in Europe. EU leaders are at odds about how to tackle the situation. Next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa, host Shaka Sali and his guests will have an in-depth discussion on the crisis.